This is the Jon Favreau's My Daddy podcast with Jessica Garcia and Monica Montoya.
That was so fucking abrupt and such a dick move.
Aaron is expressing his attitude today by cutting us off electronically.
It was so annoying. All I was doing was singing the Love Actually song.
We were singing it with our headphones on into the mics, and then Aaron just takes the volume completely down.
Like, cuts us the fuck off. Like, all sound gone.
And then he says, "Are you ready?" And I was literally saying, "I'm ready." And he started the theme song before I could finish it.
Just so much attitude today.
You got that attitude, Aaron.
I feel it in my fingers.
In my fingers.
I feel it in my toes. Feel it in my toes. Yeah. It's that
we
yeah.
had to finish.
It's that yeah that gets me.
It really gets me in my toes.
It really does get me in my toes. It's really all love really is all around.
We were talking about Love Actually because we were talking about what movies we should do for our Christmas episode this year. Mm-hmm.
Y'all know that it's a big old extravaganza.
Yeah. If you guys have suggestions for any of our holiday themed episodes, please send them in.
Let us know. Y'all know that spooky time is coming.
Yeah. And we were discussing this the other night when we went to dinner together and we couldn't really settle on what the episode should be. So we could use help.
Honestly, send it over.
Send it over.
Perhaps it's going to be Nosferatu this year.
And just that.
And just Nosferatu.
Various vampire films. Nosferatu, Twilight. Bram Stoker's Dracula, and Twilight.
Wow.
Not a bad series.
Say it. Vampire. Vampire.
Wow, you're better at being Kristen Stewart than she is.
Honestly. You know, she's playing Diana Spencer.
Oh, I do
in that
know.
New movie, Spencer.
With the fucking movie poster that has already been memed 1,000 times.
Oh my God, no way. What? I'll have to, let me look
you
it
gotta
up.
Look that shit up.
Spencer with Kristen Stewart. I was going to say Kristen Bell. Can you imagine? I would die. I would literally die. Where is this? Where is her poster? I don't see it.
It's the one of her in the white dress and she's, I mean, it might not even be her on the poster. It could very easily be a model because it's just her back. She's like lying face forward
as if she was distraught and threw herself on the floor.
Oh, wait, that is pretty funny.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie.
So now it's become like a sad meme.
Listen, guys, I love Princess Diana. She's my bitch.
Yeah, I really don't know if Kristen Stewart is going to do a good job.
To be quite frank with everyone, all of my close personal friends out there listening, all of you people, you fine people, I don't know. I have to be honest and say that I'm a Crown stan. Fucking stan.
Are you a Kristen Stewart stan?
Oh, absolutely not. But no. Like, I haven't seen her in enough things. Like, I literally watched her in Twilight. And no, I watched her in Zathura, then I watched her in Twilight, and then I watched her in that one movie about everyone being underwater and her being part of that underwater team where there's a big monster that's essentially the Kraken, but there's like a lot of little monsters and they're, you know, underwater. I'm pretty sure it was called Underwater.
I watched that movie In the Land of Women that she was in with Adrian Brody.
Did not watch that.
That was actually a pretty good movie. She still has the personality of a piece of toast, but you know, what are you gonna do?
Wow. Honestly, that is pretty fucking accurate. I'm not gonna lie.
Am I wrong, Aaron?
I'm not gonna lie.
Aaron, don't cry on the board. Monica, how are you?
I'm good. I'll formally apologize to everyone out there for this episode getting in late. Our flight from Oregon got canceled on Sunday. Then we had to rebook the flight. And because it was coming out of such an obscure like town in Oregon, in Southern Oregon, it's a town called Medford. And the airport's very small. And there are very few planes like leaving every day. We could only leave at like 3 p.m. on a Monday. On like, I swear to God, the tiniest jet I have ever been on.
I'm sure.
Like, it was only two rows of two. Yeah. Like, two people. per like seat row, and then the compartments were literally so small that they had to check any and all carry-on bags because they were too small. They literally were only big enough to fit like a purse and like some shoes. Oh, I swear to God, I literally swear. And we were taking our dog Carrie, and it was like her first time flying. It was a whole deal, and we wanted to make her as comfortable as possible. So like, when it got rebooked to this like new plane, I was distraught because it was just so small and I didn't know if she would be comfortable.
Right.
And so I very like, don't come for me, but I very like sneakily took her out of the bag and like just like pet her on my lap.
Did she make any noise?
For a while she didn't, and then she very much did. When the flight attendant was like, ma'am, put your dog back in the bag, I was like, okay, I don't want the air marshal to come for me.
Right.
So I put her back in the bag, like, you know, in her little carrier, mm-hmm. like the airline certified carrier.
Carrie's carrier.
And he finally got carried away. And so when I put her back in her carrier, she was so sad. She like whimpered and yelped and barked. It was a whole fiasco.
Poor baby.
She was so sad. But anyway, point is, we got a new flight, came back on Monday. It got super delayed. We were just all at the fucking airport. We were driving like back and forth from the airport every time because it's like there's nothing to do there because there's nothing at the terminal. There's one terminal. Just terminal. Like one.
The terminal.
Yeah, the terminal. There's one terminal.
The great film. And there's really like, underrated film. I know. And then,
much like his other airplane movies, Sully, Tom Hanks. And so there's just one terminal in the whole fucking airport. There's like nothing to eat there. There's nothing to do there. And so you just have to leave and get back in the security line, which takes 1 second because no one's there. So we just kept kind of going back and forth. We went to like a local diner to like eat and lament and then went back. But anyway, the point is, we did not get to record yesterday evening for a Tuesday morning upload. So now here we are at 9:30 p.m. on Tuesday, August 31st, recording the long-awaited, honestly.
Right.
I think everyone's been messaging us about
just constant.
Constant in the influx. Where's the episode? Where's the episode?
Did you die? Is everything okay?
Is everything all right?
No, we're fine.
If we're fine, guys, don't worry. Well, I mean, on that note, you know, I think you should stop what you're doing right now and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, I do. I think that as well.
I think that would cure you of whatever anxiety you feel about the episode not being up on time.
I agree.
But yeah, here we are. Here it is.
Wow.
Bill Unhinged. This is us.
I'm so excited.
This is us. Isn't that a TV show?
Yes, it is, starring Sterling K. Brown.
Oh, nice. Cool. Sterling K. Brown. Yes.
Monica could not remember who that was.
Well, then I remembered he played the guy, the Marshall guy, or not the Marshall, but like the major. The general in Frozen 2.
Are you just going to keep naming titles of the people lieutenant, in the military?
The sergeant.
Corporal.
The corporal. The colonel. Oh my God. I love KFC. Like, I recently discovered my love for KFC, like, as a delicious fast food option.
Oh, yeah. As far as fast food goes, like, KFC is delicious.
Their chicken pot pie. Chicken.
Yeah, tell me about it. Tell me about that pot pie, girl.
Their chicken pot pie.
Their chicken pot pie?
The chicken pot pie is so good.
I've like never had it.
Oh my God, it's so good. It's literally 11 out of 10. It's the same as if you were to pop in a Marie Callender's chicken pot pie from Costco.
But how do you feel about Popeyes? I think Popeyes trumps KFC every time.
I mean, yes, but okay.
But KFC is like specific. KFC, it's kind of like when you want Taco Bell.
Well, KFC is so specific in that it is like the wholesome Southern vibe, right? Like you want, you don't want crispy fried chicken. You want like soft fried chicken.
You want chicken that has been fried, but has sat under the warmer for like
a long
8 hours.
Time. and you want like a chicken pot pie, and right. you want like a little baby chicken little and a little baby popcorn chicken. Like these are the things you want from KFC, and you want like those watery mashed potatoes with like the chicken delicious. Gravy. So good. Made out of the powder. You know how it be. And then from
no real potatoes.
No, not a one. Starch where? And then from Popeyes, that's where you want like the kick, the flavor.
Their fries are so fire. Good.
They also have this like incredible like Cajun rice. Mm-hmm. It's so good. Mm-hmm. And then you get the, their fried chicken is always so crispy mm-hmm. and crunchy and like kind of like a little like everything's a little
they have
spicy.
Strips there, which they I appreciate.
Their chicken sandwich.
I've never had it. I heard it's amazing, but
it's so good.
Okay.
It's incredible.
I believe you.
It's better than Chick-fil-A sandwich. Not that I've ever had Chick-fil-A.
You can say
we
you've
love
had Chick-fil-A.
The gays.
We love the gays and we no longer support Chick-fil-A, but it was delicious.
At one time. Okay, the secret is out. At one time, we did eat Chick-fil-A. This was when we were young and stupid. And we no longer eat there. But Popeyes is an excellent alternative if you no longer want to support such a cluck-peration. I tried to make a pun with corporation. It didn't work.
I'm excited today because it's the first day that feels like it is kind of going to be fall somewhat soon.
One day.
In Los Angeles.
Like it'll kind of sort of be fall at some point one day.
Yeah, when I left the house to come here tonight, it was 66 degrees, which is chilly for Los Angeles this time of year. And I brought hot tea with me and I wore a sweatshirt.
It's such a vibe.
It really is. And I walked in and Monica's wearing her nap dress.
I'm wearing a nap dress, but I added a turtleneck underneath.
It's because you're chilly.
Because I'm chilly. Because I'm cold here in LA. Yeah, and it's excellent because every fall I always do a rewatch of Gilmore Girls because that's like my fall show because it's like the quintessential fall show.
Of course.
Right? Like all the leaves are all orange and red and brown.
When it's summer in Stars Hollow, it's
fall. Autumn. It's so weird. Yeah. Anyway, so I always do that. So like I started that like a couple days ago. We're watching a few more movies this week because we have to record another episode in a couple days, which... Get ready for this, Daddy. Y'all are going to be excited. A fun fact and a small hint is he has a book out right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that should tell you nothing about him.
Do. And he's someone that Monica for a while said she would never do. And then shocked me to my core when she said, you know who we should do? And I went, what?
And I said,
insert the name of next week's Daddy here. If you want to know, you could just look at the description of this podcast episode. It's fine. Anyway,
Jessica tries so hard to put all of like the movies and like the name in the description. She does such a good job. Anyway, okay, but today,
Monica,
tonight, really, it's me. Really tonight,
and you can hear it in 2.5
tonight,
hours.
It's Bill Murray.
Yes.
Yeah. Tonight. It's a Bill. Fucking Murray.
Tell
this
me
is the guy.
All about him.
I will. William James Murray. I know, what a name, right? Known professionally as Bill Murray is an American actor, voice actor, comedian, and writer. Known for his deadpan delivery, he first rose to fame on Saturday Night Live.
Ooh.
A little show and a series of
a tiny show you've never heard of.
A little teeny tiny program you've never heard of. A series of performances that earned him his first Emmy Award and later starred in comedy films, including the uber mega hit classic Ghostbusters.
Yeah, baby.
He later starred in Sofia Coppola's Lost in Translation, which earned him a Golden Globe and a British Academy Film Award, as well as an Oscar nomination for Best Actor, because he's a fucking boss like that.
Yes.
Like most comedy actors, he got a start as at the Second City Chicago, where we can only hope he ate hot dog after hot dog while pondering his impending fame. On top of his acting business, Billy Boy is also a mighty restaurateur.
Oh God, I love a celebrity who's also into restaurants.
That's what I'm trying to say. Murray is a partner with his brothers in Murray Bros or Murray Brothers Caddyshack, a restaurant with two locations.
Wow, where are they?
One of them's in Florida.
Oh, okay.
I'll
not be going to that one.
Florida man chokes at Caddyshack. Not only that, but our Bill is a part owner of the St. Paul Saints, a minor league baseball team of the AAA East and the AAA affiliate of the Minnesota Twins. He also owns part of the Charleston River Dogs, the Hudson Valley Renegades, and the Brockton Rocks. He has invested in a number of other minor league teams in the past, including the Utica Blue Sox, the Fort Myers Miracle, the Salt Lake Sting, and the Catskill Cougars, and the Salt Lake City Trappers. Holy fuck.
Why doesn't he just own one team? Why doesn't he want to be a part of so many teams?
Because he's Bill fucking Murray. He currently resides as daddy to 6 whole ass kids in Charleston, South Carolina, where he's an active community member and shines as a Southern Belle.
I did not know he had 6 children. He strikes me as someone who would have max 2.
No,
also not someone who would reside in South Carolina.
Charleston, South Carolina, baby, where he's an active community member. I'm telling you. He's the guy who like refills a little free library and like talks to his neighbors.
Such a wholesome
man. And like
participates
in like, you know, the county like pumpkin carving contests and shit.
Was
you know
this
what I'm talking
on his Wikipedia page?
Honestly, no. I made up like that last bit about the pumpkins, but you know what I mean.
You're like, I'm assuming that there's a pumpkin contest there, and I'm assuming he's doing it.
These are all my assumptions. The point is, he lives in Charleston, South Carolina. I have been once in my life.
Me too. It's an amazing city.
It's a really great city.
It's like Disneyland for adults.
It really is.
There's cobblestone streets. All the houses are different colors.
It's really
There's
beautiful.
Real fire in the lamps on the street.
Yes. Oh. It's gorgeous. The restaurants are
amazing.
Incredible. Like kind of mind-blowingly incredible. The weather is really nice. I mean, save for, you know.
It's humid as fuck.
Hurricanes.
And that...
It's a great city. Yeah. Excellent city. Would visit again. 10 out of 10. Bill Murray lives there. Now you know.
Now I definitely need to
Now
go
you
back.
Know everything about Bill Murray.
Amazing.
And what's our first movie, Jessica? What's the only movie we could have possibly done to start with?
The first movie is Groundhog Day.
What sound does a groundhog make? Neither one of these sounds. I don't think groundhogs make either one of those. What did you say? What did you do?
I just went like,
and I was like,
I do love that every time I've posted about Groundhog Day, the film on Instagram, there's obviously no groundhog emoji. So I use the beaver one. And no one has called me out yet. I really appreciate that because I'm sure you all know that I'm just doing my best.
She's just doing her best. And she really is doing the best.
So this movie is Groundhog Day. It came out in 1993, directed by Harold Ramis, screenplay by Harold Ramis and Danny Rubin. A cynical TV weatherman, played by Bill Murray, finds himself reliving the same day over and over again when he goes on location to the small town of Punxsutawney to film a report about their annual Groundhog Day. His predicament drives him to distraction until he sees a way of turning the situation to his advantage. This movie, I think it's like, this movie's like a sneaky surprise.
This movie is a classic, but not in the way that some movies are classics, right, where it's like, that's a classic. Like, that movie's not that good, but it's a classic. No, this movie is fucking incredible. The story is so heartwarming and universal. It's kind of the first movie that really did this, like, wake up and see and, like, relive your life over and over again, like, really well and tightly and not in a way that, like, loses the audience and loses you as the individual. It's got, like, Bill Murray hangs on to the script as tightly as humanly possible. Mm-hmm. Like, he does not let fucking go. He's so goddamn good in this movie.
Yeah, he makes this kind of story bearable.
Yeah.
Because obviously seeing someone relive the same fucking day over and over and over again.
Oh, God.
It gets really boring. especially when it's a movie that does have sort of like a heartwarming message at the end. I was reading a review of this movie. So like Roger Ebert had reviewed this movie once when it came out.
And he did not like it.
He was like, man, it was entertaining. And then he reviewed it again years later and he gave it 4 out of 4 stars.
Because it's good. Yeah. Because it is literally effortless.
Yeah. And he was like, what Bill Murray does is he like, he takes this story that has a message but doesn't turn it into a parable.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what I was trying to get at. Like when I was thinking about this movie, I'm like, why am I not bothered that this has such a heartwarming message? Not that heartwarming things bother me, but mm-hmm. I like, you know, a little edge.
She likes little meat on her bones.
But yeah, that's he's able to do that and like still give us the lesson, but we're still like laughing the whole time. So it doesn't seem as like heavy handed, which I really appreciate.
Yeah, 100%. And I think like, the act of needing to make repeating your days over and over again, like from an acting standpoint, the making that new and fresh with every single go around mm-hmm. is really fucking difficult. And there's a movie that came out somewhat recently that like now has a sequel that did this concept again.
Happy Death Day.
And it is, without a shadow of a doubt, a lot of fun, but it also like is low-key kind of a parable, right?
Isn't it also a horror movie, that
it's
one?
Also very much a horror movie, so it has like that element to it,
right?
But it's very much like a cautionary tale of like, don't do this because this will happen to you. Don't be a dick, because if you're a dick, then you will relive your day every day. Like, you know, and like, don't miss out on life.
Yeah.
And I have seen movies like that and like this that just don't do the concept very well.
Right.
And don't have the actors to support the concept, because again, it has to be fresh every single time, which Bill Murray is able to do. And he also brings in that like delicious deadpan, yes. like uppity, too good for you kind of a vibe that really lends itself to the story, especially as this guy, Phil, who he plays Phil the Weatherman. And he is like he like looks down on the people in the town and like calls them hicks and like mm-hmm. thinks that they're like completely beneath him. And in order to make a character like that likable, he also has to be funny and mm-hmm. he has to react in a really human way, and we have to be able to sympathize with him with everything that's going on. And so like juggling that, like juggling being kind of an unlikable character with the premise of like, this happens to you over and over and over and over and over again. It's like, how are we able to latch on to this main character, right? Like how is this movie good and not bad?
Right.
And the only answer to that question is Bill Murray.
Exactly.
He's just such an exceptional actor, and the amount of talent and quite frankly like raw emotion that he brings to this movie makes it so that it is so ungodly entertaining, and you don't feel like the whole time you want to slit your wrists because you're just watching this happen over and over again. And he's an unlikable character, so yeah.
Yeah, his style of comedy lends itself really well to this movie, because it is so deadpan. You never really know like when he opens his mouth if he's going to be saying a joke or
exactly.
if he's going to say something serious, which is really useful for this movie because there are so many moments that are legitimately serious. Like I was reading in the trivia and they were very clear to take him through like the 5 stages of grieving
yeah.
in this movie, because I mean, can you imagine waking up the same day over and over again? Like it genuinely is a like terrifying at a certain point.
Yeah.
And like, when he realizes he can like die.
Yeah. And there's just like real, again, there's real emotion backing it all up. It's not just like, let me be out here cheaper by the dozen, like all like, let me be over the top and like enjoy this fucking insane ass premise. It's like, no, look at it from a completely human standpoint and go, what if you completely lost your life?
Yeah.
He essentially died and yeah. is just reliving this life over and over and over again. And he has no control over it. And there is no choice to be better every single day or like tomorrow was a new day. Like, I will be better than I was today. It's like, that is not an option for him. Mm-hmm. He just has to be better in the one day. And that is fucking depressing to think about.
Yeah, it really is. But I love seeing him kind of like swing through all the various emotional places that this story can go. Obviously, mm-hmm. they refrained from some of like the really terrible possibilities of where this story could have gone. Like, he could have like murdered people and things like that and had no consequences, but it didn't go that far.
Yeah.
But like, I do love that he like gets really, really sad at one point and really depressed, and then he gets really angry, and then he tries using it to his advantage. It becomes very like classically male. And I do love that Bill Murray often has like these sort of misogynistic tendencies. Yeah. It's very funny coming from him.
Yeah.
Because he's not like a hot guy.
He's not like a macho man.
No.
He is like kind of a soft-spoken, soft boy, meaty big. Like, he's not someone who you look at as being a threatening person or like a manly man or like a macho guy.
He's like your shitty uncle.
Yeah, he's like your he's like your shitty uncle who like takes all the mac and cheese and like doesn't say anything.
Exactly.
Doesn't make more either. Just goes, huh.
And who drinks your parents' booze and then like blames it on you.
Yeah, 100%. That is who he is. And he's also like kind of a creep and kind of a weirdo. And like he's just an asshole. Like, he thinks that everyone is dumber than he is, and mm-hmm. that he's the smartest person there. And when you have someone who thinks that way and who like, it's a level of narcissism that you genuinely cannot get behind unless it's Bill Murray. And that's literally part of his brand.
Yeah, exactly. And he like forces you to think about all of the things that this movie makes you think about, which is a lot of shit, because you like, he's thinking about lots of things. Like, when he's using the, you know, the day repeating to start learning more about various women so that he can sleep with them and make them fall in love with him.
Yeah.
You start going like, well, what is love, really? Because then he actually starts falling in love with Andy McDowell's character, and their chemistry is beautiful and wonderful.
Like, oh, incredible.
And he is legit falling for this woman, but he's doing it through manipulation to an extent because he has no choice.
Exactly.
And like, what else is he going to do with his time? But then it makes you as the viewer start going like, how real is this actually? And how real is it for him? And does it really matter how real it is for him, et cetera, et cetera? But then the story transforms because then it extends so much farther than just like his own personal interest. Then he actually starts becoming interested in the people around him. And then it makes you start realizing like everyone you pass in life has their own story and trajectory, which is very like cheesy, but it's very true. Mm-hmm. And in this movie, you're not given that in a way that makes you want to like throw up. So
yeah, it's not like every little action you can change someone's life. It's like, no, like we're all human beings on this floating rock.
Mm-hmm.
How long have we been on this rock?
God, the lighthouse was just a metaphor for life.
It really was. So we're just a bunch of fleshy, meaty blobs floating around on this rock. Mm-hmm. And we all have lives and every day we make decisions and choices that like progress those lives.
Exactly.
Right? And I think a big part of this movie that I love is it just exists as it is, mm-hmm. and allows the characters in the film to exist as they are, and allows Bill Murray's character to exist as he is and like learn his own lessons and do what he has to do. But like, it is not using anyone as like, hey, look at this person. This person's life is forever changed because of Bill Murray.
Right.
Like, that doesn't happen. What ends up happening is it's a lot of introspection. It's a lot of like existential crises that happen throughout mm-hmm. this film, because it's like, can you imagine waking up every day and going about your day, and then at the end of the day, nothing mattered because it will all just happen all over again.
Yeah.
Right. And if that isn't an existential crisis, I don't know what the fuck it is. But it sort of like levels the playing field with everyone there. Everyone is the same. Everyone is just living their life. Everyone's on this floating rock. And everyone is just making choices. And that's really what this movie boils down to, is like, what are you gonna choose today?
Right.
Who are you gonna choose to be today? because your choices dictate how your day is going to go. And his choices are the only reason his days look different mm-hmm. than they did before, even though it is the same calendar day.
Yeah, because at least he remembers the days.
Exactly.
Also, before we end this section, did you notice the very small Michael Shannon cameo
yes! in this movie? It's just slight mm-hmm. and just barely.
He has like three lines towards the end.
But he is just such...
He's so cute.
Such a little baby.
He's so young. I looked it up. This was his second acting job ever. Which such is so funny.
Baby.
Yeah, if you guys are familiar with the movie but don't know the part I'm talking about, it's where it's the like big party scene towards the end.
Yeah.
Towards the end of the movie, where they have like the auction for the men to go on dates with the women, and then like a bride and a groom come up to him and they're like thanking him for everything, and then he gives them monster truck tickets, and the groom is Michael Shannon.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah.
There you go.
Now you know.
Now you know. The more you know, the more you calls.
Don't give them free ad space.
Don't be a fashionista. Be a maxinista.
Oh boy, another one. Okay, well that was Groundhog Day.
If you have not seen Groundhog Day, by the way, pop it on. It is such an incredible movie. You will not regret it. It is a movie that I've actually, that like growing up, we literally would watch on Groundhog Day.
How cute.
And they would skip through like the meatier parts.
Yeah, I remember I watched that movie a couple times as a kid and I didn't get it, obviously, because I'm a kid. Like, I knew what was happening, but I was like, this isn't good. This is really boring. And then watched it again as an adult and I was like, oh no, this movie fucking slaps.
It slaps. It fucks.
Yeah.
It really does.
Okay, now, Monica, let's get into a movie that really fucks.
That really fucks with the capital F. One of two films directed by Sofia Coppola today, which honestly, unintentional.
Unintentional.
Did not realize it until I literally wrote these descriptions down and was like, oh my God, what have we done? But here we are. Okay, ready? This movie truly fucks.
It does.
Lost in Translation, baby. Yes, you heard that right. I will repeat it one more time. Lost in Translation came out in 2003, the year of our Lord. Excellent year. Excellent year. Written and directed by Sofia Coppola. What a babe. A lonely, aging movie star named Bob Harris, played by the one and only Bill Murray, and a conflicted newlywed, Charlotte, played by Scarlett Johansson, meet in Tokyo. Bob is there to film a Japanese whiskey commercial. Charlotte is accompanying her celebrity photographer husband. Strangers in a foreign land, the two find escape, distraction, and understanding amidst the bright Tokyo lights after a chance meeting in the quiet lull of the hotel bar. They form a bond that is as unlikely as it is heartfelt and meaningful. What a fucking movie.
I love this movie. I have complicated feelings about Scarlett Johansson, but I love this movie.
This movie is incredible. I think taking Scarlett Johansson out of the conversation, I think this movie has so much going for it. It is such a gorgeous, gorgeous like slice of life, like fly on the wall feel to it. And Sofia mm-hmm. Coppola, I mean, Sofia does this really, really well in general. Like she really focuses and hones in on like these teeny tiny little pockets of life mm-hmm. and these little characters that, and like the way that she creates these kinds of films are, and indeed like she is a fly on the wall and her only job is to capture what is already there.
Yeah.
And in order for her to do that, she needs someone like Bill Murray, who is able to be himself and be soft-spoken and be a little bit edgy and be a little bit like messy and human and like unkind at times. And it is just, this movie is just fucking incredible. Like there's just no other description for this movie.
Yeah, I love movies that are like, it's not quite meta, but it's like slightly meta in the sense that it, like, this is how I felt about Funny People, where your lead is playing not who they are in real life, but like a version of themselves. Like Bill Murray is playing an actor and he has, you know,
he's an older guy.
Yeah. He's facing the same problems I'm assuming he was facing at the time in real life.
Yeah.
I love getting to see actors do that because I feel like it's a challenge to play yourself in the present.
Oh, yeah.
Because you just kind of start going like, well, who am I? Not that Bill Murray and I have the same process, because I'm sure we don't.
Oh my God.
But you know what I mean.
Yeah. And again, like, sort of back to the whole like fly on the wall thing. He's just there.
Yeah.
He is just the thing that is so gorgeous and beautiful about Bill Murray's performance in this movie is he's literally, to your point, like, he's just playing himself, mm-hmm. and he's just existing, and he's truly just there to serve the film,
yeah.
in a really beautiful way. And like, Sofia Coppola has set this up so that she's just a fucking fly on the wall staring at what he's going to do next. Like, watching this movie, and I've seen this movie quite a few times, but rewatching this movie, I found myself kind of holding my breath sometimes, like waiting for him to say something, because it was just so intentional with everything that he said, because it was like watching a human being waiting for the other person to ping pong back at you the other end of the conversation.
Right.
It was just beautiful.
Right. I think he surprisingly comes across as very relatable yeah. in this movie, even though there's nothing really relatable about his circumstances exactly.
I'm sorry, I'm not an aging actor
in Tokyo hanging out with a 17-year-old
with like pink hair or like a wig. Just ridiculous.
But the first thing you notice, or at least that I noticed about Bill Murray, is his apathy. But it's not quite that he doesn't care about what he's doing. It's just that it's such a foreign place and he feels so out of place. And it's really brilliantly visually represented by Sofia in everything.
Just like, yeah.
The visuals of him feeling very lost in this very busy, bustling, bright, lots of alliteration.
Oh, wow. BBB.
City. And he feels super out of place, and therefore it turns into an attitude for him. It almost turns into like condescension for him. And you kind of see the stereotypes of like the condescending American coming up with these Japanese people who are just trying to work with him. But there's a lot of complicated feelings underneath that, because even though he is a movie star and even though they brought him there to work, he's still like, what the fuck am I doing here?
Yeah.
And what am I doing with my life?
Yeah. I think there's a sense of melancholy that exists in Bill Murray's, I don't want to say like agenda, but like part of what's underlying in everything that he does is a huge sense of melancholy.
Yeah.
Underlying everything that he does. And I just think that in specifically this movie, it's beautifully sad to watch him exist. And to your point, like just be alone in this bustling city and like turn it on its head and essentially become like this condescending asshole.
Yeah.
Who, it comes out of a place of insecurity and sadness, right? Like the melancholy is there, but like ends up being a fucking asshole to everyone around him.
Yeah.
And doesn't make a choice or doesn't make the effort to even begin to understand other people's point of view, because he is so lonely, because he is so alone and secluded and isolated from the millions of people around him that yes. are all trying to get to a place or go somewhere or be something. And he's like, well, I am something, but really I'm nothing mm-hmm. because I don't know what the fuck I'm doing here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it when he meets Scarlett Johansson and they start hanging out,
which I don't know if you could even call it like hanging out. I think they're just like existing with each other.
Well, yeah, but that's kind of the point that I'm getting at
yeah.
is because he is so lost, and I wouldn't say he's looking for purpose either, because I think he knows that that doesn't exist for him there. He's there temporarily. So he's just going to do what he can while he's there. And it brings up this larger message that is what the film is all about, is that like, existing in someone's life and being a part of someone's lived experience, you don't need to have like a place in someone's life in order to have an impact on them or in order to have value. And even though they are so different, and for me personally as a viewer, I like question some of their chemistry because I don't find it to be chemistry. I find it like a weird father-daughter dynamic that
yeah.
kind of grosses me out. But I think the stark differences between them contribute themselves to this idea that you can have value in someone else's life without having a place in someone else's life.
Yeah. 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 I think a lot of it is like, I was kind of like thinking about and searching for the word that I wanted to use. And I think the word that I'm looking for is detached.
Mm-hmm.
Like untethered.
Yes.
Very like floating above the surface, not really there. Because it's very apparent that he and Scarlett Johansson are attracted to each other and are trying to, and like are getting to know each other in a non-platonic way. But you almost take like a double take and are like, wait, but because he specifically is so detached and untethered and like doesn't show one iota of emotion, you're like, but is he? Which is where that chemistry of like father daughter comes in, because if he doesn't give her one morsel of emotion or romantic attraction, it's so hard for you to get on board with this like, will they, won't they, are they, do they like each other, do they not?
Yeah,
it's very confusing.
I mean, I think I have feelings on both sides of the coin of this whole thing of like her age. And like, I mean, I do straight up think that it's fucking weird that she's 17 when they filmed this movie and she's supposed to be like a mid 20s married woman who's like tired of her husband. And I'm like, bitch, you know nothing.
Bitch, you are 17.
You are in high school.
Get to algebra two.
You don't know anything. And I'm supposed to view you as some sort of sex symbol. But like, the only positive thing I will say about her age in this dynamic is that if we're gonna go with the idea that she's too young to truly know herself or her partner, that's why it's so easy and special for her to connect with a stranger, because her whole life is a connection with a stranger, AKA her husband and herself. Like, she doesn't know who her fucking husband is.
Yeah.
And she doesn't know who herself is, which is why it's special that she's connecting with Bill Murray, because she's a child and doesn't know shit. So.
Tell us how you really feel.
But that's like, that's the part of this that I kind of liked, where I'm like, she doesn't know anything. He's detached and living in a fog. And yet these two people have found each other and their relationship means literally nothing.
It means nothing. And it is,
and
so
yet has so much value in the context of this story. And I think that is the beautiful part of this movie.
Yeah. 100%. I think, like, to put it this way, like, they matter in a vacuum.
Yeah.
And when you take them out of that vacuum, they no longer matter.
Yeah.
As they no longer matter together. They only matter apart.
Right.
And the individual matters. But even that is up in the air. So in a vacuum, Bill Murray and Scarlett Johansson's characters matter together. And in this movie, their coexistence and their relationship, honestly, whatever you want to call it, they're like passing ships in the night, whatever the fuck they're trying to do. It matters. But when you take them out of that vacuum and you look at them under a microscope, you're like, none of this fucking matters.
No, literally.
This is all dust bunnies that I found under my bed.
In a way, it didn't even matter that much to them, because otherwise, like, they would have gotten each other's phone numbers or something. Like,
but nothing.
They're just like, it doesn't fucking matter.
Again, passing ships in the fucking night. Once they get to that like point where they're meeting, right? It's like, oh, hey, I see you.
Right.
I see you. But then they fucking pass and it's over.
Yeah. I mean, and over to the point that I can't even say confidently that these characters are walking away from this story having
changed
very much. Mm-mm. I do think they learned a lot, but it's kind of hard to articulate like exactly what they learned, because so much of that is unspoken.
Yeah.
There is a lot of dialogue in this movie, but a lot of the feeling, like the emotion, is not articulated in any way. So it's kind of difficult to describe. But like, I don't think these people are leaving, and like, I don't think she's leaving her husband. I don't think he is going back to LA and, you know, like making a better career for himself that where he feels more meaningful, et cetera. Yeah. But I do think that they'll remember the feelings that they had in this context.
I think if you're looking for a movie that ties together at the end really nicely with a pretty little bow, like, this is not the movie for you.
This is not the movie for you.
This movie leaves you hanging in a way that feels like a conversation that wasn't quite finished, or like a question that you ask someone and then they answer in a really backwards way and you're like, but you didn't answer my question.
Yeah.
And then they walk out of your house. Like, that's kind of...
And then they fly to another country.
And then they fly to another country, and then you don't have their number because it's disconnected.
Right.
Like, that is really what this movie feels like. It feels like you are asking a question, and no one's fucking answering you. Yeah. And it just doesn't provide you any, like, real closure. So if you're looking for, like a movie that's, like, from point A to point B to point C and, like, wraps up really nicely, this is not the movie for you. Watch something else. And literally anything else. But it is such a gorgeous movie. And I love so much that if you took Bill Murray out of this movie would fucking blow.
Yeah, I mean, she wrote the part for him, so yeah. There's that.
So there's that. And I think something that people have to remember is it was him or nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And what he brought to this movie was so incredibly valuable that he lifted up everything around him.
Yeah.
Because Bill Murray has such an incredibly unique star power and such an incredibly unique voice and ability to make everyone around him better,
mm-hmm.
and make Sophia's direction better, mm-hmm. and like really emphasize the loneliness and like this stark contrast of like this American in Tokyo in the bustling city, and like his soft-spokenness in contrast with him being a fucking dick and like being condescending and being weird and a little creepy. Like, it's all there, and he really brings it all up with him.
Yeah.
And if he wasn't in this movie either A, wouldn't exist, or B, would be fucking terrible, and I don't think we would have been reviewing it.
Yeah. I completely agree.
Amen.
Oh, what a good movie.
Billy Boy.
He's so good.
I love Lost in Translation. Fucking watch it. I own this movie, so I don't know where it would be to stream.
Where did I stream it? I might have rented it. I don't remember. Who knows? It's streamable. Maybe on like HBO Max.
Listen, guys, I'm sure it's streamable. Go watch it. Literally, it's actually a really great fall movie. Fall, winter.
Yeah, it does have that vibe. It's very hazy.
Good vibe. Good vibe.
Yeah, yeah. Also, our boy Giovanni Ribisi is in it. In peak like 2003 fashion.
Oh, so good.
So many popped collars coming from Giovanni.
So Ribisi. Many popped collars.
Also, Anna Faris is in it.
Oh my God. Yeah. She plays like this, like, not hoity-toity, but like,
she's kind of a bimbo.
Kind of like like very like, kind of like a very stereotypical lady celebrity, lady star.
Yeah. Like, she's doing press for an action movie and she's being asked questions by these reporters, and they basically ask her like about the director or a co-star or something. She's like, well, we have a lot in common. Like, we both have two dogs and we both live in LA and we both love Mexican food. So we just have a lot in common.
And you're just sitting there like, I know that person.
I know exactly who that is.
I know exactly who that is.
So good. Go watch it.
Go watch it, baby. Go watch it. What's your last and finale film?
Our finale film is a current Bill Murray flick. And that is On the Rocks. Came out in 2020, written and directed, again, by Sofia Coppola.
Wow. Sorry, guys.
The story of a young mother who reconnects with her larger-than-life playboy father on an adventure through New York. In this comedy about aging, marriage, and the tenuous bond between parents and grown children, New York author and married mother of two, Laura, played by Rashida Jones, has become suspicious that her career-driven husband may be having an affair with a coworker, a speculation encouraged by her caddish, bon vivant father, Felix, played by Bill Murray.
Whew. Bon vivant.
Bon vivant.
What does bon vivant mean?
It means like, it's like happy-go-lucky. I think it literally means like living happily or happy life.
Like good life or something?
Something okay. like that, yeah.
I know. Beau means good.
Yeah, vivant means living.
Good living.
Good living.
And he's good living fucking American dad.
He's more like a fun uncle than a father in a lot of ways when you first meet him. Actually, I mean, through the whole movie, even though his intentions are very fatherly. You know
Indeed.
What I mean?
100p. I love this movie. I told Jessica to watch it as part of this Bill Murray episode because One, it is one of the few movies that he has out right now that features him in a role like this, where it's not just completely comedic and it's not just like very slapsticky. And it's not just his A Very Murray Christmas special, which I would also have been down to do.
Of course.
Also directed by Sofia Coppola.
Is it really?
Yes. I know.
Sofia, we got to talk, girl.
Sofia, girl, you better than this, girl.
Because I thought this movie was cute, but not a Coppola. Not a Coppola film.
Sofia, who are you, girl? Are you having an identity crisis?
Yeah, she's like, I'm not my father. What the fuck?
I'm not my father. Ah.
Sorry, Sofia. You're great.
She drinks beer, but not wine. But anyway, I love this movie because of Bill Murray in mm-hmm. this movie. He is just so... Again, he pulls out the deadpan to mm-hmm. the fucking max in this movie because he plays like this guy who is like a playboy, really like he's rich and he lives in like New York and he's a part of New York society and he is kind of like, oh, I don't give a fuck, like yeah. very like fuck everything, I'm the man. This is my life. I'm not like a regular dad. I'm a cool dad. mm-hmm. Very much like, ugh, Regina Jones's character is my pal. Like, she's not my daughter. She's my pal.
Yeah.
Very those vibes. And he just does it so well. And in his old age, he's just gotten so much more refined and like just aged like a delicious Coppola wine.
Yeah. Yeah, he's very honest in this movie. And I mean, I told Monica this before we recorded, like the movie isn't my favorite movie.
It's
like,
it's nothing truly special.
No, Rashida Jones is in a lot of it. And quite frankly, I find her rather boring. But Bill Murray carries the entire fucking movie. His performance is very, very honest. And it's not like that's surprising to me, but the role itself is of a very honest man who's honest about things that I am shocked he's honest about.
Honestly.
Which is what I appreciate. Like, he talks so openly about his behavior as a man in this. Like, it's just fact. There's no shame or pretending, but that doesn't impact how much he loves his children. And I think that that's a really unique portrayal of the compartmentalization that I'm sure a lot of specifically men go through.
Yeah.
Men who didn't succeed as husbands, but are good fathers in a way.
Yeah.
And not the way that we're told fathers should be, but like when it comes down to it, they're there for their children. And the love he has for his children and his grandchildren is in no way impacted by or affected by, it doesn't even cross paths in his mind with who he is as a man, as a husband,
bachelor,
anything.
Yeah.
But I feel like women especially, I mean, I would feel this way, often look at men like that and you're just like, well, how the fuck can you be a good father if that's how you are as a man?
Yeah.
But for him, there's no correlation between the two. And that's interesting to watch him do, especially at this age.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch him juggle the different aspects of his life mm-hmm. because none of his life is, all of his life makes sense to him.
Yeah.
But none of his life touches, they're like, it's like, you know those plates
that are divided,
Zupals,
yeah,
where it's like the ears are like compartments and then like the smile's like another compartment and yes. like all you can divide all the food like for like the picky kid eaters that mm-hmm. are like, I don't want my carrots to touch my peas.
I was that trying.
I don't want my ketchup to touch my rice. Like, you know what I mean? So he is able to so expertly juggle all of these realities and not apologize for them
yeah.
and not go, no. Yeah, that's also my reality, but we're focusing on this reality mm-hmm. right now, not trying to hide that other reality under the rug, just trying to focus on this one now. Come on, come everyone. Let's talk about this one now. We're talking about this one. So a lot of it is like really dialogue heavy. So he is giving Rashida Jones advice about her husband, who she believes is cheating on her, mm-hmm. but also kind of doesn't believe that he's cheating on her.
Yeah.
She's just allowing her father to sort of feed her all of this advice that he is giving, obviously warranted. Like, she's asking for it. It's not unwarranted.
Also, like, the clues are big, I would say.
Yeah. 100%.
Like, I would also think my husband was cheating on me if I found the things she found.
Well, that's exactly. So obviously he's like, well, duh. Like, yeah. Don't be a fucking idiot. Like, he's cheating on you. This is what you gotta do. We gotta perform this special ops mission and, like, intercept this shit right where it starts. Like, he is just being so, like, I got this. I've been through this before. I was the one doing it. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's an interesting combination of him trying to be a father and him projecting.
Yeah.
Because he's projecting all of the shit that he did onto his son-in-law, but using it to be a good father.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he's using it maliciously. Obviously, he genuinely thinks that his son-in-law is cheating on his daughter.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a very weird combo, but it is refreshing, I think, to get to see Bill Murray as a dad, period, because despite having six fucking kids in real life, you never get to see him play a dad.
Never, and less so a dad to an adult daughter.
Yeah.
Who is her own person, who has her own ideas, her own family, is fully formed. Like, I think from a comedic standpoint, like, it would be funny to watch Bill Murray try to parent like a six-year-old and be like, stop doing that. What are you doing? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But watching Bill Murray parent a like fully grown woman, a full grown woman with kids, with a husband, her own fucking life, like, that dynamic is honestly so interesting. I had never thought that I needed to see Bill Murray as like a dad to an adult child.
Same.
But here he is being a dad to an adult child, and I'm loving it. I want to see Bill Murray in like a limited series, like The Mayor of Easttown or some shit on HBO, and like having adult kids and being like, here's all my unwarranted advice.
Yes.
Take it or leave it, bitches.
I would love to see Bill Murray do some like serious dramatic shit in his older years, because I'm very into this swag that older Bill Murray has.
He has such a like bravado to him.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same Bill Murray, obviously, but like he's a little older. You know, he's a little wiser,
slower,
but no less funny, and still just like right on it at every step of the way.
Yeah. And this movie is just, it's very dry. Yeah. And a lot of it is, the tone of the movie is really set by Bill Murray's dryness and his frankness with Rashida Jones. And for you to enjoy this movie, you really just have to like get past Rashida Jones and the movie itself. Because again, like the subject matter is a little bit boring. A lot of what the movie entails is Rashida Jones like in silence, just walking around her apartment, like looking at things. Or like in the hallway at the school waiting for her kid.
Yeah,
like,
talking to Jenny Slate.
Yeah.
Who's really funny.
Who's actually so fucking funny in this movie.
Her cameo scenes are really funny.
Because she's playing like this annoying ass bitch who's just essentially is there to make Rashida Jones's life like a living hell.
Yes. She basically just uses Rashida as her therapist.
Like, yes.
Every morning at drop off, they just stand in the line together
in the hallway of the school.
In the hallway, and she's just going on and on and on about like, well, I wanted to text him, but I didn't think that I should text him. And blah, 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 blah. And Rashida's just like, I don't care. And she doesn't even respond to her. She just, when it's time to leave, she just goes, I have to go now. And Jenny Slate, because she's so vapid, she's just like, oh, okay, bye.
Oh my God. Yeah. Like, we'll pick this up like later.
she doesn't even care. It's so,
so funny. It's so funny. So like, once you sort of get past like, because the movie is quite slow.
Yeah.
It is quite slow. There's not a lot going on. The biggest drama in this movie is when Rashida Jones and Bill Murray go follow incognito her husband to see if he's cheating at his literal company dinner where nothing is going on.
Uh-huh.
And like that is the most dramatic point basically in the whole movie. That and at the end when Rashida Jones is finally like, okay, you need to stop projecting shit onto my life because now I'm doing it and I get it from you and it needs to end. Like the cycle needs to end here, Papa.
Father. The cycle needs to end, Father.
It all needs to finish now. Thank you. So once you get past like the slowness of it all, I think it's a very charming movie.
Yeah, it's very charming. It's sweet. I mean, yeah.
We love our Bill.
We love our Bill.
Our Billy Bill.
He's so good. He's so fucking funny, man.
This makes me want to do an episode devoted solely to his comedic acting, because I almost feel like we did all of his...
He has comedic moments. Like there were points I had about some of the other movies. Like he does, it's funny in all of these movies, he has great physical comedic bits.
Yes.
Like obviously multiple in Groundhog Day, but then in Lost in Translation, there's that really great scene where he's stuck on the treadmill or like the elliptical. It's really funny and goes on for way longer than you're comfortable with. And then in this movie, On the Rocks, he has that stupid like millisecond, which I think is so funny. Someone made it into a GIF, which is so funny because it's the quickest moment where he has roses delivered to Rashida Jones for her birthday. And then he like comes to pick her up to take her out for her birthday. And he's just standing next to the roses and then puts his whole face into the bouquet because it's huge. And the camera cuts immediately, but it's so funny. And so it's stuff like that where you're like, he's still in there. Like his SNL shit, it's right there.
It's all baked under the surface of the pie.
It's right there.
The crust is really thick on the pie, but his filling is still in there and it's still delish.
Ew. his filling.
Mm. His filling is still delish. Is that boysenberry?
Oh boy.
Well, that was it. That was Billy Boy. Just for the bill of it. Just for the bill of it.
Shut up.
That's the title.
Monica, what have you dabbled in?
Well, other than flights and things getting canceled and rerouted and shit, we went to Bestia.
We did go to Bestia. I forgot that that was going to be our joint dabble.
Yeah.
It was a magical meal.
It was literally the best. So we walk in, right? And I'm dressed in some pink pants. Jessica's dressed in a gorgeous gown. She looks like she's come out of a cottagecore magazine.
Yes.
She has a makeup
done. Monica looks like Samantha Jones.
Samantha Jones, public relations.
Specifically in the episodes that take place in Los Angeles.
Yes, where she's wearing pants and a big belt.
A light suit.
A light, belt. Some light layers. So we walk into Bestia. We immediately look for Nicolas Cage. Can't find him.
Can't find him anywhere. He's not there that night.
He's not there that night.
It doesn't seem like anybody famous was there
that night.
Immediate
disappointment.
Yeah.
But it only goes up from there.
Truly.
Because we sit down. I love sparkling water. Same. Jessica loves sparkling water. No one else ever wants to order the sparkling water.
Nobody ever wants the fucking sparkling water when you go to a restaurant and they're like, do you want tap or sparkling? And I was like, obviously I want sparkling, but this other bitch I'm with doesn't want it. This time the other bitch did.
This time we got the sparkling. It was delish. It was bubbly. But the best things on the menu were yet to come, baby.
Yes.
We had the most incredible drinks to start.
Yes. The cocktails. Oh my God.
Oh my God. God, I had some kind of a spritz with bourbon in it or brandy
in it.
It
had like apricot something in it.
Oh my God, that shit was on fire.
Yeah, and I had a tequila thing that was like tequila, coconut, lime.
Honey,
it was delicious.
Incredible. And like, obviously I had some.
We had sips of each other.
It was a whole thing. We did like the thing that you do at weddings where you're like, you interlock arms.
Yeah, exactly. Like our arms were like swan necks.
Oh yes. So like sip each other's drinks.
We didn't do that.
And so we did that. And then the burrata pizza.
We got a burrata pizza that had fermented chilies on it.
Oh my God. Unreal. It was just like a flavor bomb in your mouth.
We got a shockingly amazing Caesar.
Randomly amazing Caesar. The crispest, crispest lettuce you've ever had in your life.
Oh yeah, that shit was crisp. And I don't like crispy
that
lettuce,
shit was
but that was delicious.
It was crispy.
And then we had two pastas that rocked my socks off.
Oh, rocked socks.
Yes.
There was like a pesto-y pasta that we had. Like
we didn't have a pesto.
We didn't have a pesto.
Mine was like an agnolotti, so it was like those little pocket thingies.
Yes.
And it had guanciale in it.
Yes.
Or prosciutto or some
shit
like
that. It was prosciutto.
It was delicious. And then Monica got this gnocchi with burrata and then we shared them. It was amazing. And the desserts. Oh my God.
Oh my God. So I got this like stone fruit
chiffon cake.
Ensemble. And I mean, it was the tits.
Aaron's just sitting here like, I wasn't invited.
He also, like, I literally told him everything that we had on the menu and he went, ew.
Like, he's like, I don't like joy.
Like, so. A fucking plebe. Like, Jesus Christ.
Get so, a palate, Aaron.
Get a fucking palate.
I'm kidding. I love you.
This stone fruit ensemble, it was so good.
So good.
Cherries, plums, peaches. I was going to say apricots and nectarines at the same time. So delish.
So good.
And then what was yours, Jessica?
Oh, I got these blue corn fritters that had like maple butter and ricotta inside of them with huckleberry ice cream. Fucking bomb.
It was truly
one of the best meals of my life, honestly.
One of the best meals ever.
Got to go back next season because they have a seasonal menu. So we have to eat everything.
100.
Sorry, I don't make the rules.
I also do not make the rules. Also, the reason I thought that one of the dishes was pesto is because I just remember brown butter in my mind.
Oh.
And I don't know why I made that connection.
I see. It's okay.
Because one of the dishes had like a brown butter.
It's like a creamy buttery sauce.
It was
so
delicious.
Well, that was our joint dabble.
Anyway.
And it was a delicious dabble.
I'm getting so hungry just thinking about it. Ugh, we have to go back.
We have to go back.
We simply have to. We must.
We must go back.
We must.
Well, we don't have a question this week. So just again, go rate and
get on that. Get on that, you hoes.
Download and subscribe and everything. Thank you.
Thank you. The Aristocats.
We.
Oh my God. Show them the verse, you know.
Okay. It's the Aristocats are never found in alleyways or hanging around the garbage cans where common kitties play. Oh no.
Wow.
That's my party trick.
I really love that. She knows that very specific part in the Aristocats song.
I know none of the other lines.
Which is really funny because it's like really deep in the song. Like it's such a random place in the song. Oh my God. And on that note.
Don't sue us, Daddy Favreau. Good night, Monica.
Good night, Jessica.